This is Scott Allen from odecode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from lazycoder.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Dente, emceeing this week's session of the Technology Roundtable with John Galloway and Scott Kuhn, a.k.a. LazyCoder. Our fourth, K. Scott Allen, is doing deep cover work at this week's TechEd conference, so he won't be joining us. But hopefully he'll have lots of juicy stuff for us next week. So the first topic for this week, there was a fair bit of discussion on podcasts and blogs and Twitters about how important knowing the C programming language is for programmers these days. There was a bit of back and forth between Jeff Atwood and Joel Spolsky on their podcast about this. And so wanted to see what the guys had to say about this. What do you think? Is it important to know C in this day and age?
Well, I'd forgotten that we'd actually had a bit of this discussion a few years ago. And Scott Kuhn sent some links out, and I forgot that we'd argued back and forth in comments a while ago. So my position, which is not really, I think, a popular one, but is that it's not really a good use of time compared to a lot of other things that you could learn.
And what do you think is more important than knowing?
Sure. Well, okay. So there's it never hurts to know everything, but there's a limited amount of time that you have to learn what you can learn. So I think there's so much more that's worthwhile. For instance, learning about databases, database access, learning about, really deeply learning about HTML and CSS, learning about if whatever framework you're running on. If you're running on .NET, really deeply getting into the .NET runtime. So I think that those kind of things, if I was going to hire somebody, I'd probably rather have somebody who really had spent 4 years deeply understanding .NET over someone who had 3 years of .NET and 1 year of C++ or C. So, I guess part of it is about what you're going to spend your time on. There's that part to it. The other thing is that I really don't think that it's working at such a different level of abstraction that I don't think it translates very well into something you're actually going to use. And then finally, just to lob some softballs up here, but finally, I think that it can set you up for making some, how do I say it? I've seen people make wrong assumptions by bringing ideas of memory management or patterns, grab a pointer to a Windows handle or whatever, and like the way that APIs and frameworks are structured in C, and bring that over into .NET, and it doesn't seem to translate well.
What do you think, Scott?
Well, so during that little back and forth we had originally, and that was kind of, let's go ahead and say historic. Because that was the first time that Jeff Atwood had ever commented on my blog, and he pointed me to your blog. So I kind of, that was the first chance I got to read both of your weblogs. So my point in that whole back and forth was not necessarily that you need to learn C to be a better programmer, but that you should have a general understanding of some of the CS concepts that C kind of forces on you. So it's not that you need to learn C, but you certainly, you need to learn about memory management. You need to understand how it works, very close to the metal. And once you kind of have that understanding, then you're better able to profile and diagnose leaks in whatever framework you choose to use at that point, because you understand how memory works, how memory allocation works, you understand some basic ways that garbage collection works. And so you can start to investigate. So when you start to see a leak occur in one of your apps, you can say, okay, so I need to look at the heap, or, I need to look and see, where my weak references are, if I'm leaving any of those behind and orphaning them, or if there's a bug in the framework that I'm using, or in my code, or whatever. So that was kind of my point. And people were, the whole thing started off by saying, what should CS grads be learning? I think Spolsky had originally, lamented the fact that they were all using Java instead of learning C. And I didn't really care about the language they were using. I think using Java for learning object-oriented programming is fine, but I do think that at some point you need to understand, you know, what's really going on. The analogy that I made was, it's the difference between, understanding how memory management works and how all these data structures work, is the difference between having a mechanic who just knows how to paint your car versus someone who knows how to fix your car and diagnose, you know, problems with your car.
So I think the general idea makes sense, that you want to kind of understand your platform. But I think that C is not really a good way to do that, because, like, for instance, I'm looking at the Edgell's article. It was called Back to Basics, and it was on December 11, 2001, post number 319. As I scroll through it, I see a lot of code that's talking about pointer operations to concatenate strings. And not only is that not really helpful for how you concatenate strings in .NET, but it's actually wrong. I mean, if I tried to translate this directly over to .NET, I'd be iterating character arrays and trying to pop them one onto another, as opposed to doing something that's a little more optimized and also a lot less code, code to maintain and all that. And also that can apply to, you know, like if you're going to take C++ memory management rules and try and apply them to .NET, you're going to be trying to allocate and deallocate your memory and trying to do things that really the garbage collector does better by doing bulk operations, you know? So I think that most of this stuff could really be covered by a one-day survey course. I mean, that's making it a little too extreme, but a week-long survey course where you say, look, your computer has memory. It has registers. Here's a heap. Here's a stack. But I really don't think that you get a whole lot more out of learning how to manually allocate and deallocate memory.
So it sounds like, I mean, my takeaway from it was, Joel's, the real point is you gotta have some understanding of how the machine actually works. The standard route historically for that has been learning C. And so, you know, that's sort of how Joel, I think, thinks about how you understand how a machine works, how a computer works. But I agree, I don't think that that's the only way to learn that. In fact, while I'm never going to say that somebody should go out and learn to write assembly language, you know, in the last 3 years, I've actually looked at a lot more assembly language than I have C code. Because there are times when you break into the debugger and you don't have any source code, and actually being able to read assembly language is not a useless skill. To me, like, the understanding what's going on at that level is important, but knowing C code isn't the only route to that.
I would definitely agree with that statement, that learning C isn't the only way that you can learn about those things. I certainly haven't worked in C professionally ever in my entire career. The last time I worked in C was, I don't even remember when. But I remember it was the World War IV BBS source code was written in C, and I think I used the Turbo C compiler, or maybe it was the LOTCOM compiler. and that was basically, you know, just, I wasn't writing anything from scratch. I was just modifying existing code. So I guess I haven't exactly practiced what I preached. In that respect, I didn't go and learn C or C++ in order to learn these things. I just kind of learned them on my own. And most of what I learned about memory management, I learned from, people who I had known that really did some deep diving back in the VB5 and 6 days. VB was one of the first really popular, so I guess you could say the most popular garbage collected framework. You could still set things manually to nothing, you know, which is the equivalent of null. But, you know, you didn't have to.
Most of the time.
Most of the time, yeah. There was some parts where you had to. But so that's kind of my point of view. I guess maybe that's just a personality quirk of mine, too. I want to know how things work. So, you know, I'm not satisfied with understanding how to allocate and deallocate memory. I want to know what that does at the hardware level. So I read books like Code by Charles Petzl. And that kind of explains, you know, how the logic gates work, how RAM actually stores the settings, and things like that.
actually did one project that was in C++, and it was way over my head, and I just kind of talked my boss into letting me do it at the time. This was, I was dealing with some tricky year 2000 bug issues. It was in an actual, like, application that was heavily used, and it was used for graphic layout of a magazine, and there was a lot of things in there where things were named and keyed by date, and so the change from 2 year to 4 year threw everything off, including a lot of pointer sizes, and you know, like threw a lot of things off. So it was that was interesting, but you know, and I've played with over the years, like Assembler and even wrote one working IL program, but I don't know really how much any of those actually applied, other than some things that I could get out of a PowerPoint that said, hey, memory's expensive, reading and writing from disks is even more expensive, you know, that kind of thing. Part of it is that we all take our own kind of experiences and apply them to everybody. I mean, I've probably been blessed to not have to dig in and troubleshoot at a deep level, or I haven't written code that runs in Linux or whatever. So
Jeff made a point. He kind of brought up Spolsky's post about leaky abstractions. And that's kind of the reason that you need to understand this thing, is because there's no abstraction that is going to be absolutely perfect and not have any, you know, leaks or any problems with it. And if you don't, you know how to think on that level, then you're kind of beholding. But you know, in some ways, you know, I certainly couldn't repair my TV set if it went down. I could get in there and poke around and probably pop a capacitor and knock me back on my butt, but you know, I don't think I would fix anything.
Yeah, I think Jeff had another great point too, which is that generally when projects fail or when things go awry, it's not because of some low-level bit twiddling that somebody needed to know how to do but couldn't. It's because business requirements weren't understood, because communication was poor. I mean, it's for a million reasons that have nothing to do with how memory is laid out, you know, in a machine. So spending your effort on learning how to do those things well will probably serve you better than spending the effort to learn how to, you know, move pointers around.
I think that we have to, like, kind of discipline ourselves, too, because I think a lot of us got into this field because we really do want to get in, we want to tinker, we want to control, but we also, like, the more that we get in and tinker and really, in our professional work, usually we're setting ourselves up for problems. If not right now, we're setting the guy that comes after us up for problems. You know, when he's got to understand why our custom little class that did some sort of 2% increase in whatever, you know what I mean? And now it doesn't work because there's a service pack that changed something, you know, and you're off on your own then. We want to be able to dig in, but we also need to want to pull back when we're actually doing our work.
Okay, let's move on to our next topic. Today we saw some of the news coming out of Tech Ed. Hopefully K. Scott will have a lot more for us next week. There were some big announcements today, and just want to go around the group and get people's perspective on what they heard and what they thought was interesting.
Well, I mean, one thing that's interesting, although there's not too much information on it, is Silverlight 2 Beta 2. So the information that came out there was that it's going to be released this week. No real public announcements on what's in there. And that the NBC Beijing Olympics stuff is going to be running on that Silverlight 2 Beta 2. So that's kind of interesting.
And as a Firefox 3 user, yeah, all I can say is hallelujah. Because it's driving me crazy that I can't run.
Yeah, it's been funny watching that post, you know, the Bugzilla thing about what's going on with that.
So, let's see, what else did they talk about? They talked about IE8 Beta 2.
Again, no real information there. I don't know if there was anything elsewhere.
Is there is it still appropriate to add Electric Boogaloo onto to version 2 of things? No, is that played out and old? All right. Silverlight Beta 2. Yeah, sure. Okay. I don't know. I've kind of lost my... it's lost its luster. Although, I really, really like the fact that there is a competitor to Flash that is not made by, you know, Adobe or just open source. And, let's see, the other big thing I think we commented on in on Twitter, both Kevin and I did, like an hour apart, I noticed. We both had the exact same thought about this product, Velocity. Basically, that Microsoft has rewritten Memcache. And they've put it out as a CTP. That's, you know, the simplified bubblegum wrapper description of Velocity, I think. I'm sure that as more details come out, there will be lots and lots of, you know, things where they'll make sure to point out that it differs from Memcache because it does this and Memcache doesn't. But this is kind of a reversal of roles that I'm starting to notice more and more in the Microsoft and kind of commercial sphere. It used to be that open source projects were primarily clones of existing commercial projects. And now we're starting to see commercial projects that are clones of open source projects. And that's kind of an interesting flip, I think.
Yeah, Microsoft has taken some flack on that in recent years. You know, their MS Test stuff, InUnit, you know, Entity Framework in Hibernate, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, and this just it comes off as another example of Microsoft, you know, seeing what works in the open source world and creating their official version of that. That's just me sort of being a little, you know, a little bitter, I guess. But I kind of suspect that the reason why they needed to do this was because they need this for their eventually to be released cloud computing services and want to have that available, you know, for use in the cloud. So from that perspective, it kind of makes sense. I don't think that they would be deploying Memcache in that, you know, in that environment. But it is a little disappointing to see their resources being, you know, used to sort of duplicate what's already out there.
I think that, like, from their posts, the things that I picked up, kind of their reasoning, because they did mention Memcache, and it looks like, you know, one is that they want to be able to integrate it into their product, and Memcache is BSD, but still they really, to, you know, change it, tweak it, fit it into their platform, it really, I mean, at that point, it maybe makes sense to do that. And then also to kind of enable, I guess, to .NET and Link and all that, enable it, you know, to make it so that it's not just, you know, so that it's easy for developers to use more so than Memcache.
Right, and Memcache is known to have, you know, not necessarily be the easiest thing in the world to use. But I do think that, I mean, there is another way they could have gone with this, which is to use, you know, sort of create Link to Memcache and put it out there as a sample Link provider and sort of supported that community in a way that they generally, you know, is an approach that they have followed in recent years. But it seems like they could have gone a little bit different route with that. But obviously they have their reasons.
Who knows, it may not have actually been all that difficult once they've got caching in the .NET framework to build a service layer around it. But it is something where, you know, people aren't going to go out and look for something like Memcache unless they're really struggling. But if it's part of the platform and it's already just kind of built in, people might say, hey, well, let's flip this switch and now we're using this thing.
So how about this Oslo stuff? I mean, we've been hearing a little bit about this codename Oslo project. I haven't yet seen the demo list on the keynote, but it's sort of listed as described as the Uber unified modeling platform. And, of course, unified anything kind of makes me nervous sometimes, but, what's your guys' take on it?
So, the first time I heard of a unified modeling kind of thing, was at PDC in 2000. I remember seeing several BizTalk presentations where they said, you know, you just draw your boxes and arrows and connect your services up, and XML go in and business object come out, kind of thing. I think it's Cold Fusion.
Was that called White Horse?
At that point, I don't remember what it was called. I think it's like a Cold Fusion. I think it's something that people are going to constantly chase, but I don't think it's physically possible.
Now, you're saying Cold Fusion, the actual physical process, not the web technology.
Correct. Although, I don't think that Cold Fusion, the web technology, is necessarily possible. I'm going to get crap from some of my Adobe friends about that, but yeah.
You know, I watched the demo, and it was kind of the analyst is going to look at the, you know, it's a Visio-type view of my application, and then I'm going to go in and add an interface, and then now I'm going to change something, but now I've broken this, and it shows a little highlight in the Visio-type interface, and I go and make a change, and then everything looks good on my diagram. And working in Visio kind of always bugs me anyway, so, I mean, working in a diagramming tool kind of throws me off a little, you know, where you're right-clicking and setting things. DTS was always a pain, and SSIS, I mean, I've just never kind of gotten in that mindset. I guess that they may have a better chance at doing some of that now that they're really kind of standardizing on these models. They're using the same kind of model system for Entity Framework and Link to SQL. And from what I've heard, there were different groups all over Microsoft that are trying to model entities, you know, and then finally they said, hey, you guys are using entity modeling inside of SQL Server with analysis services and reporting, and you guys are using modeling here, and you guys have this model-driven approach inside of, you know, your ORM tools, and so they standardized.
DRY, don't repeat yourself. So, you know, I mentioned that I think it's kind of a pipe dream that no one's ever going to get to, but then as soon as I said that, I thought of two technologies that are kind of old, very old, that were actually pretty successful, that were kind of a drag and drop, design your component, design your system thing. The first one I thought of was Livewire. Does anyone remember Livewire? I believe it was called Livewire. It was kind of an overlay for Visual Basic, I think. So yeah, you could design up these components, and then within the Livewire diagramming tool, you could, you know, connect them and design, you know, workflows or calls. The second thing I thought of, I think, was called LabVIEW. And it was primarily a wrapper around, I think it was for designing component circuits. But it could have been at a higher level than even designing circuits, and actually allow you to, you know, hook up C functions or something under the hood. But those were, it must have been at least 10 or 15 years ago when those were around. And there hasn't really been many things since.
I've seen, even just recently, like Microsoft Robotics Studio has kind of a visual programming environment where you can kind of hook things up and, you know, drop in an if-else thing and a go-to block. And I think those things sort of work at a certain level, and then you run into a spot where you need to write some code. And I think the difficulty is the transition from the cute modeling tool into the actual code, you know, where the abstraction doesn't get thrown off and where it moves smoothly back and forth. And I think that at least what I saw, like, so far with Link to SQL is that it really isn't too bad with that. I mean, as long as you're okay with the way that their models are generated, the code kind of does flow back and forth with the model.
In general, that's kind of the battle line. It's the tweakers and twiddlers versus the wizard-driven development people.
And I guess, like, the goal is that you can do both. Like, you can get in, you get, you know, huge bang for the buck out of the wizards and the designers, and then you say, okay, now I need to go low level, and you just, you know, double-click on something and write a little bit of code, and then you're good. It's hard to really pull that off well, I think.
What else did they talk about during the keynote here? DB2 database access? Yay.
Yeah, hold on to your horses there. Woo!
Yeah, it's kind of a funny one to, I don't know. Although I think there have always been, you could buy third party or different support tools.
Yeah, I believe there's always been a driver for DB2.
You know what I think I'm seeing here is, I think that it's not about database access. I think here that they're saying that Visual Studio Database Edition can access DB2, so you can do your database management model
right.
and stuff. But yeah, not really a huge woohoo thing. And then there's a SharePoint Services extension, which I guess, again, is another, if you're into it.
Yeah, 25% more evil.
So, I mean, overall, I think we knew that Internet Explorer Beta 2 was due out sometime soon, and Silverlight 2 has to ship, you know, I mean, they'd announced second quarter, so we were kind of looking for another beta. So
did they mention whether or not Beta 2, Silverlight Beta 2, will work with .NET SP1, 3.5 SP1, or 2000? It's a .NET 3.5 framework SP1, isn't it? It's not just Visual Studio 2008 SP1?
It's both. Yeah, they do work together. I don't know that there's anything hugely... Like, Silverlight runs kind of in its own .NET stack, so... I mean, there's some updated Silverlight tools for Visual Studio that'll drop on top of whatever Visual Studio 2008 you're running.
Have we hit our topics here? Let me go back to the list. I think we've... Okay, that's it for this week's Technology Roundtable, so see you guys next week.